All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today we are doing our year in positional review, looking at the Falcons quarterback position and talking about how Matt Ryan, as well as others, performed in 2020.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And today we are finally kicking off our year-end reviews, where a series of podcasts that we will probably undergo over the next 2 to 3 weeks, in which we will try to sort of look back at the 2020 season, go position by position, and talk about the various performances of all the players across the roster, and sort of use that to look back at 2020, but also give us an opportunity to look ahead to 2021. And in a lot of ways, largely due to the fact that the Falcons are coming off a 4-12 season, in a lot of ways, we're going to be looking at sort of areas where they can improve and ways that they can improve and what things need to happen in 2021 in order for that to happen. So we're going to start things off with the quarterback position, and we'll spend a large portion of today's podcast talking about Matt Ryan, his seeming struggles in 2020, but that will allow us to focus and really drill down on the lack of confidence that Matt Ryan played with this year, as well as the previous year, which led to some of those struggles, and why that lack of confidence exists, which will allow us to talk about Dirk Koetter's play calling. Then we'll talk about Matt Ryan's ability to handle pressure. Then we'll get into the conversation about the various backups, Matt Schaub, Kurt Benkert. And then we will, of course, get into that big topic of discussion that will continue to be a big topic of discussion for the next several months, which is what the Falcons need to do to improve that position and whether or not they're going to go after a quarterback high in this draft class. And we'll discuss that. And I'll be upfront with you. I will make the case for why it makes sense for the Falcons to draft a quarterback number one with their draft pick. But obviously, as you listen to today's episode, you are free to disagree or agree with that statement. But I will at least try to make the case why I think that's the right way for the Falcons to approach things. But without further ado, let's sort of jump into the conversation about the lack of confidence and how that was a key issue for Matt Ryan in 2020 and has been a key issue for Matt Ryan throughout these last two seasons under Dirk Koetter. And, you know, I've been vocal thinking that most of the Falcons' problems offensively were due to play calling. And the easiest way I can explain why I've come to that conclusion is that essentially when you're watching a quarterback play, oftentimes he's going to go to the line of scrimmage, or every time he's going to go to the line of scrimmage. And the thing that he's going to be checking pre-snap and sort of doing the calculations in his head, so to speak, he wants to check how many blitzers are coming and what does he think the coverage is going to be. And obviously he's going to determine that once the ball is snapped. But essentially that information that he takes in pre-snap is going to often tell him where the ball is supposed to go and how quickly it should go, and how quickly he should be able to get rid of it. And ideally, based off of that information, if the play calling is right, you know, you're going to have oftentimes situations where he's going to look at it and say, okay, the defense looks like they're going to be in this coverage, so that means route A should be come open, or they're going to be in this other coverage, and that means route B should come open. And that's going to influence sort of the order of progression that that quarterback is going to go through once the ball is snapped. And I think really the key problem with Dirk Koetter's offense, and why you hear me say things like it has vanilla route concepts, is because you don't get those openings that we're talking about. And you contrast that with, say, a Kyle Shanahan offense, where it was less an issue of the quality of the receiver and more an issue of the route concept. You know, you go back to 2016, it didn't really matter whether it was Julio Jones or Aldrick Robinson running that route. It didn't matter if it was Jacob Tammy or Josh Perkins. It didn't matter if it was Mohamed Sanu or Justin Hardy. The Falcons offense operated in this sort of pick your poison type of mentality and spreading the ball around, because it was more important about the routes than necessarily the individual talent of the players. because a lot of that play calling was geared to attack specific coverages. And that's the thing that makes Shanahan's offense and him specifically so effective, because a lot of times he's trying to dictate what that coverage is so that he can exploit it. And in other instances, he'll call a play, see how the defense, you know, matches up to it, reacts to it, and then later in the game, and even in certain instances immediately after calling that play initially, he will call that play again and essentially zig when that defense is expecting him to zag, and that's the way that he exploits it. And that leads to a lot of easy throws, easy windows, and that's why Shanahan's offense is considered to be very quarterback friendly. The problem with Dirk Cutter's offense is it doesn't really do all those things. And it tends to be much more reliant on the supposed quality of the wide receiver. And so it does matter whether it's Julio Jones versus Allen Robinson, or at least in the case of 2020, say Olamide Zaccheaus running that particular route. And I think that's where Ryan's confidence becomes an issue, because the play design isn't really giving him those easy throws so often. And, you know, he's essentially going to the line of scrimmage, and because there isn't an obvious route to throw to based off of the coverage that he's seeing pre-snap, he's basically dropping back. He's reverting to a simplified thing where it's like, it's not really route A is going to come open against this coverage. It's going to be Julio's going to come open against this coverage, because he's the only guy. There isn't a clear and obvious route that's going to come open. So I'm going to rely on the receiver that I think is most capable of getting open, and that leads to a tendency to stare down receivers. Now, this was the case of Dirk Cutter's offense way back in the day when he was initially the Falcons play caller and offensive coordinator, but it was less of an issue of Matt Ryan staring down his receivers in 2012, because those receivers were Julio Jones, Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez, all operating at a high level. But then when you saw some of the cracks in the Falcons offense in 2013 and 2014, when you, due to injuries and other various things, those guys weren't operating at that high level, or they weren't around to be able to play. And so you saw the offense start to diminish. And the other issue that you throw on top of that is in the years since then, defenses and offenses have evolved quite a bit. And so that style of offense isn't nearly as effective today in 2019 and 2020 as it was, say, in 2012 or 2013. And I think that's the big reason why, leading to me, the point that I'm trying to make is where you saw issues this past season where the Falcons offense suddenly became broken and Matt Ryan's production dropped precipitously when Julio Jones was out of the lineup. You know, and basically because of what the offense was asking him to do, Matt Ryan basically approached most plays with the progressions of Julio 1, Ridley 2, and then 3 would presumably be his tight end. I think this is a factor that we'll probably explore a little bit later when we get to the tight end positional review. But this was a reason why I was not as sort of keen on the idea of letting Austin Hooper walk, because I knew that having a reliable receiver that Matt Ryan trusted would be an important part, would be much more valuable to this Falcons offense and him personally than I think a lot of people realize, because of the nature of the Dirk Cutter offense. And without that sort of built-in rapport that he had with Hayden Hurst, you know, basically the Falcons offense, when Julio was out of the lineup, became a one-man show in a lot of those games. And that became an offense that was relatively, for, you know, modern defense, is easy to stop if you know the ball's only going to go to one player. And, you know, I think that changed the final three games of the season, where you did not see, you did see the Falcons offense effective and efficient in those three games relative to what they were in the earlier parts of in the five or six games where Julio Jones was out of the lineup. And, you know, I think the main factors for why that changed were in part due to the fact that Hayden Hurst and his rapport started to really solidify over those last three games. We'll probably talk again about this more when we get to the tight end position. But like, when you look at the numbers of Hayden Hurst and Matt Ryan's connection over those final three games versus earlier in the season, particularly in the games where Julio was out of lineup, it's night and day different. You know, I think the play action passing was much more effective, particularly in weeks 15 and 16 against Tampa Bay and Kansas City. I also think you can add that, you know, Russell Gage stepped up and was a bigger part of the Falcons offense, particularly in the two Tampa Bay games, where he sort of had put up, you know, some of the better games, production games that he had all year long in those two particular games. So he kind of stepped up to be that number two guy behind Calvin Ridley. And then I think the third thing, or the fourth thing, is that you kind of saw in those games Matt Ryan was not making nearly as many mistakes, particularly when it came to turning the ball over, as he did in earlier outings, where you saw some very costly and poor decision-making from Matt Ryan on some of those turnovers. He had 11 picks last year. I would guesstimate, you know, we could probably split hairs, but anywhere between like 5 and 8 of them were mostly on the quarterback. And, you know, 3 against the Chargers, you know, the red zone turnover he had in that Week 5 game against Carolina when the Falcons were coming back. He had a couple of bad ones against Chicago and New Orleans earlier in the season as well. And to me, it's not a coincidence that several of those games I just mentioned, or all of those games I just mentioned, were games that Julio Jones was out of lineup. And I think, again, that speaks to the lack of confidence that Matt Ryan had that led to him making some bad throws, some bad decisions, being late on some throws in those games that he played with a little bit more confidence over those last 3 games than he did earlier in the season. I think that's why you saw this offense at least functional over the last 3 games of the season without Julio in the lineup, which was not the case earlier in the season. And, you know, with that being said, we'll sort of continue and talk a little bit more about some of the positives that Matt Ryan showed, some of the improvements that Matt Ryan showed in 2020, especially compared to his 2019 season. But we're talking about Matt Ryan not having a lot of confidence, and that requires him having the right parts around him. And of course, you would love to have a website that you could go to find all those right parts to surround Matt Ryan with. But that website doesn't quite exist for football players, but that website does exist for any of the parts that you're looking for your car, truck. And of course, that website is none other than rockauto.com. They have everything from engine parts, brake parts, motor oil, new floor mats. Get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. That rockauto.com catalog, it's unique, it's easy to navigate, so you can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, choose by brand, specification, and price that you prefer, and that prices and those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Just go to rockauto.com, see all the parts available for your car, truck, right locked on in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So have you ever wondered what color the Gatorade is going to be that's going to be poured over the Super Bowl winning coach? We just had an inauguration. Maybe you're wondering how many times during the broadcast of the Super Bowl will you hear the names Biden or Trump? Maybe you're just not into the game itself, and maybe you enjoy Super Bowl Sunday because you like to watch the Puppy Bowl. And if you've ever wanted to bet on any of those 3 things, there's only one place that has you covered, one place I trust. That's, of course, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Again, don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So Matt Ryan didn't have too many wins as a quarterback in 2020. Maybe he'll have more in 2021. And if you're looking for more wins in 2021, you should listen to the Locked On Bets podcast with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They're picking college basketball, football, and NBA locks all year long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts. So when we talk about the positives of Matt Ryan's 2020 performance, I think the big one is I think he played better. While he wasn't necessarily playing with a level of confidence that I would have preferred to see from Matt Ryan, I think he was objectively better in 2020 than he was in 2019. You look at his Pro Football Focus grade, he was ninth highest in terms of their passing grade. He was 15th among quarterbacks in DVOA. He had a 93 passer rating for the season, which was the 5th highest of his NFL career. He had a 66.7 QBR using ESPN's QBR metric, which was the 4th lowest of his career. And he had a 6.5 adjusted net yards per attempt, or ANYA, which was his 8th highest of his career, or 6th lowest. So kind of middle of the road type of season for him, slightly below average season for him from that perspective. But all of these are things that he was better at in 2020 than he was in 2019. So I do feel like, despite talking about some of the shortcomings of Matt Ryan this past season, I do think he made strides for a number of reasons. And one of the things I think that he improved upon, particularly if you listen to the podcast a year ago when we were talking about Matt Ryan's struggles in 2019, where he had one of his worst seasons of his career, I think a big part of that was that he did not do a great job handling pressure. I still think not handling pressure well was still an issue for him in 2020, but I don't think it was nearly as problematic as it was a year ago. And I think some of that is owed to the fact that there were several games, particularly in the latter half of the season, that I think kind of you sprinkle in some good games where he handled pressure that made that overall issue less problematic, where you didn't really have those sort of singled out positive games in 2019. You know, I do think he did play with happy feet, but I feel like that was more of a problem earlier in the season, particularly in those early games when he was without Julio Jones in the lineup. You know, I still think Ryan's ability to handle pressure is going to continue to be an issue moving forward. And so it does affect my outlook on Matt Ryan long term in terms of his potential to be a high level starter in the future. And it's reminiscent somewhat of a player in Eli Manning. And I remember going back to that 2014 game in week 5 where the Falcons lost to the Giants. And that was sort of my break point for that particular season of watching the film and seeing how much the Falcons struggled. And part of that was due to the fact of watching that game, how allergic Eli Manning was to pressure. And the fact that the Falcons, had they only been able to get just a little bit more pressure on Eli Manning, I do think they probably would have found a way to win that game. But like Manning in that game was so allergic to pressure that it was a point where I kind of declared him quote unquote washed as a starter. And I don't think Matt Ryan has reached that point yet in his career, but I do think looking at these last two seasons in particular, unfortunately, things are trending in that direction. And so I do think if we're going to be living in a dimension, in a reality where the Falcons are firmly committed to Matt Ryan being the starter for the next 3 to 5 years, I think they're going to have to continually make investments in their offensive line to make sure that that doesn't become an issue further down the road in the future. So that's something that we certainly can discuss further when we get to the offensive line year in review. But I will say that the offensive line, I do think, is trending in the right direction. But, you know, I don't think they can afford to really have any more hiccups in that regard. And we really do need to keep that trending in the right direction, and certainly sooner rather than later in that regard. So, again, I think Ryan was better this year, but I do think overall it was kind of a fairly middling season for Matt Ryan by his standards, a fairly forgettable season by his standards. You know, I think at his best, he was very good in 2020. At his worst, I think he was pretty bad in 2020. But I think for the most part, he sort of landed somewhere between, you know, the spectrum, the range of fine and decent, you know, depending on what you feel about those adjectives. So with that, we'll sort of stop talking about Matt Ryan and move on and talk about these backup quarterbacks. Let's talk about Matt Schaub, who is retiring. You guys know that I'm a Matt Schaub fan. You know, he did what you needed him to do as a backup, come in and manage a game effectively. You know, one of the things about me is I'm much more passionately anti and critical of Dirk Koetter, given his, in my eyes, highly flawed game plan in Matt Schaub's lone start in 2019 against the Seahawks, than really anything he did over the last two seasons with Matt Ryan. And without going too deeply into it, you know, to me in that particular game, it was very clear earlier that summer in the Hall of Fame game, in the first preseason game, where Matt Schaub really struggled to handle pressure. And I talked about this on the podcast back then, back in that August. But, you know, in the event that the Falcons would be forced to have to start Matt Schaub in place of Matt Ryan, that it would be in their best interest to sort of implement a heavy usage of play action passing, because Matt Schaub is kind of allergic to the pressure in the same way that we're talking about, or I talked about with Eli Manning. And to me, the fact that it took basically until the, I can't recall, the fourth or fifth possession in that Seahawk game for Dirk Koetter to figure that out, to me was really a damning indictment of his limitations as a play caller, and particularly his coaching ability, than anything that he did with Matt Ryan over the last two seasons. So that to me was symptomatic of a larger and central issue with the Dan Quinn regime, which is, you know, that inability, as Arthur Smith certainly would put it, being adaptable. And that showed itself in many instances when backups were sort of forced in the lineup and in the next man up sort of situation. We all know that backups aren't as good as starters, but, you know, good coaches can make up that difference to a certain extent and try to put those backups in a better position to be successful. And that was something that this past coaching staff continually struggled with. As for Kurt Benkert, you know, I know there have been you know, extensive expectations from fans as over the last 3 years that he'd be the one sort of filling that Schaub-shaped hole at the Falcons QB2 spot behind Matt Ryan. Unfortunately, I think the timing is not working in his favor because I expect the Falcons to bring in somebody else this offseason to fill that hole. We'll get to that later on today's episode. But, you know, I'm certainly still curious what growth Kurt Benkert is going to show this upcoming summer, assuming that we're going to get some preseason games to watch, unlike last summer. You know, we've seen certainly the flashes that Kurt Benkert has the ability to be that sort of long-term backup behind Matt Ryan. I don't know if he has the ability to be a viable starting candidate or heir apparent to Matt Ryan. But I think, you know, a lot of that is due to the inconsistency, and I think that's really been the biggest issue that's held him back when we've gotten chances to see him. So I'm hoping that this summer we'll get to see a little bit more consistency from Kurt Benkert in the preseason if we get that opportunity. So, you know, given I think there's a high probability that the Falcons will be drafting a quarterback later this spring, you know, I kind of feel like the best case scenario for Kurt Benkert is that he can come in, play really well this summer, and kind of outshine that rookie early as that rookie's trying to get his feet wet and force the team to have to sort of keep three quarterbacks for the foreseeable future. And we'll see sort of how he can play that by ear in terms of, you know, pushing for a long-term backup role. So at this point, I wouldn't necessarily fully close the door on Kurt Benkert having a future here in Atlanta, but obviously I don't think the odds are necessarily in his favor, given the circumstances that the Falcons find themselves in this offseason. But I certainly think he'll have an opportunity to prove himself to this new regime. And maybe he'll benefit from the fact that he won't have necessarily high expectations for him and can come in and surprise those guys this spring and this summer. So we'll see how that develops. And we'll continue today's Locked On Falcons podcast by wrapping up by talking about whether or not the Falcons should be looking to draft a quarterback. And I will be upfront with you, as I said at the top of the show, you know, I do think there is a strong case, a compelling case for why the Falcons should use their top selection on a quarterback. You know, I will make that case coming up on today's podcast. But before we get there, guys, I do want to let you guys know that there is an NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. And whether you're an Atlanta Hawks fan and want to check out Locked On Hawks hosted by Brad Rowland, or you're a fan of any of the other 29 NBA teams, of course, you can find it on your favorite podcast platform. So subscribe to Locked On Hawks or your favorite NBA daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So Thursdays on Locked On NFL are a must listen with Ryan Tracy and Christopher Carter as they break down the biggest midweek NFL storylines. Get the expert analysis from Ryan and Chris every Thursday by subscribing to Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So we're talking about the Falcons drafting for the future, and I feel like there's a 99% probability that the Falcons are going to use at least a top 100 pick on a quarterback this spring, whether that's in round one, round two, round three. I think it's going to depend heavily on how this new regime assesses the various quarterback prospects available in this draft class. But I do certainly think all signs are pointing in them to use one of those three picks on a quarterback this year. You know, we've seen the team use top 100 picks on a quarterback only three times in the last 20 years this century. So, you know, those were Michael Vick, Matt Schaub, and Matt Ryan. So I've been pretty vocal over the last month on this point. You know, I do think the most likely, the safest bet is that they will use that top selection on a quarterback. But we'll see. Lots of things can change between now and the draft over the next 3+ months. A big reason why I believe that and why I somewhat advocate for that is because I feel like for many of the reasons that we've already discussed today with Matt Ryan, that you're kind of getting a descending, declining player, and you're hoping that that rookie that you draft at some point in the future is going to be that ascending player. And at some point, those two paths are going to cross, and then the organization can make a move at the quarterback position without skipping a beat. Right. And you don't enter into quarterback purgatory, which we know can be not a great place to be. You know, what that point, when that point, that break-even point, so to speak, is going to be, I have no idea. It could be a year from now. It could be 5 years from now. Who knows? Or any point in between. But I think there is a significant amount of evidence that suggests that that point where we're talking about Matt Ryan's decline and the need to move on to a new quarterback may be sooner than I think some people think. Whether we're looking at quarterbacks like Carson Palmer and Ben Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees and even Tom Brady to a certain extent, there seems to be some evidence that after the age of 36, which Matt Ryan is going to be later this year in May, you know, and whether that's age 37, 38, 39, when we look at these other quarterbacks, and, you know, that depends on the guy. But it does seem like those guys start to lose something that they really have difficulty getting back at around those ages. And it doesn't mean that those guys cease to be productive starters for their respective teams, you know, at age 37 and above. You know, Brady clearly shows that he's still very productive at age 43. You know, Breeze was very productive, particularly over the last 4 years going into his 40s. But it did seem like around 2017, at his, which was his age 38 season, the Saints sort of morphed their offense to be much more of a balanced attack and leaning much more heavily on their run game and their defense rather than the ability of Drew Brees. And then we found out, you know, we've learned and solidified and been entrenched with the idea, particularly over the last 2 years as Brees was hitting age 40, that he had essentially a dead arm. And I think, you know, if we're being honest, Matt Ryan, from a physicality standpoint, in terms of his tools like arm strength and athleticism, is not really starting at the same point that the Palmers and the Roethlisbergers, the Rivers and the Breezes were. So, you know, to be blunt, a 38-year-old Matt Ryan or whatever in 2 or so years with a quote unquote dying arm, to me, could significantly be a significantly worse quarterback than what we are talking about with Drew Brees at that same point. I do, however, want to make this clear. Where the Saints and Steelers with, you know, a declining Roethlisberger and a declining Brees have been in recent years isn't a horrible place to be. You know, that's a team that's a good team that has a quarterback that probably isn't going to win you a Super Bowl, that isn't probably going to play at a high enough level to win you a Super Bowl. But that's a quarterback that's certainly good enough that you can win 11 or more games each year, put yourselves in the playoffs. Again, I don't think that's a terrible place to be. That's basically where the Chiefs were for Alex Smith for several years until they ultimately made the decision to go and get Patrick Mahomes in 2017. So I want to make that clear, where I feel like despite that criticism of, you know, not wanting to necessarily be there, there's a lot worse places to be in 3 to 5 years than essentially being an 11-5 team with a quote unquote washed quarterback, right? Which is what I'm talking about. My concern is where the Falcons could be if they remain committed to Matt Ryan too long. So, like, I say that because I think there's a tendency for people to be a little bit overly dramatic in saying, you know, oh, this franchise is doomed if they don't take a quarterback. No, it's like, look, it's not the ideal place to be. Ideally, you want to be in 3 to 5 years. You want to be an 11-5 team with an ascending young quarterback rather than a descending, quote unquote, wash quarterback. But, you know, second place ain't so bad, right? And you know, you look at the situation, like, if you're a Steeler fan right now, I know it's a tough place to be right now, given the disappointment of how the season finished. But would you rather be in a situation of being a Steeler fan right now, or would you rather be in the situation of being a Bengals fan right now? You know, that's where I kind of feel where it's at. And I feel like, you know, being a Steeler fan is a better place to be, although I know to some people that would be somewhat controversial. So that's kind of the last point I want to make. So I feel like because of that, that's why I am an advocate of, if you think that quarterback that can be that sort of ascending quarterback that can give you that 11-5 team 3 to 5 years from now is available at pick number four, I think as an organization, you kind of, it's not necessarily a no-brainer, but, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer as I see it to take that quarterback. Now, if you don't see that quarterback, if the Falcons evaluate these passers and don't think that the guys that are going to be available at that pick or who are ultimately available at that pick are that guy, then they are justified in passing on that guy and going in another direction with that pick and looking ahead and hoping that they will have another opportunity to get another bite at that apple in the future. Because, again, I don't feel like, you know, all of a sudden the quality of quarterbacks is going to suddenly dry up, you know, after 2021. But, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a meteor on its way, you know, and so therefore, but I, again, if that's the case, then look, we'll have bigger fish to fry than necessarily who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Falcons come 2022, 2023. But I don't know why I said that. Maybe I've been watching too much of The Expanse these last couple of days. But anyway, that's kind of the last point I wanted to say about that. So I feel like, again, I'm an advocate of taking quarterback that high, but I'm not sitting here saying like this, it's the only pathway to the Falcons. You know, like, I just feel like people tend to get in these very binary thought processes. And I think one is the superior way of doing things, but it's not sort of like clearly the obvious choice. Cause again, a lot of it depends on how you evaluate these quarterbacks. If you're not a big fan of Justin Fields, or you're not a big fan of Trey Lance, or a big fan of Zach Wilson or Mac Jones or Kyle Trask or Jamie Newman or whoever else out there that the Falcons can explore those options, then you know, there's no reason to force a pick if you just wind up taking a player just to take a player, as opposed to taking a player because you really feel about how good that player is. That's what the best player available approach is, right? So that's the difference between best player available in needs-based drafting. Like, you certainly, the Falcons need a backup quarterback, but, you know, if that guy's not the best player available at pick four, then there's no point in drafting him. So that's the last point I want to say, guys. A lot of these issues we will continue to talk about throughout this offseason. A lot of these issues, particularly when it comes to building up the supporting cast, whether we're talking about surrounding Matt Ryan with the best supporting cast available, or a new rookie with the best supporting cast available in the future, are going to be topics that we're going to continue to discuss as we continue these positional year-end reviews at the various skill positions on offense. Don't think I'll do the running back position on Friday. I'll probably wait till next week to start that, and we'll hopefully get through at least running back, wide receiver, and tight end next week. We'll see about offensive line. But, you know, I think there's an opportunity for you guys to send in your questions or any feedback that you want to provide on anything I've talked about on today's episode, or any things that you want me to talk about on future episodes as we continue this thing. And, you know, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Lockdown Falcons, on Facebook at Lockdown Falcons, or you can send an email to lockdownfalcons@mail.com should you want to provide that feedback. So appreciate it, guys. And we will at some point be talking about running backs. And, you know, that includes my favorite position. Position, the fullback position. So Keith Smith, you know, a lot of Keith Smith talk on the horizon. So appreciate it, guys. Until then.